So you talk about preparation. David Morata has prepared 20 pages of a report here for us to discuss today in this hour. We're never going to get to all of it, but we are going to get to a lot of it as much as we can. It's very important, and I hope that he ends up publishing this in another place so that you can go review it, because the information is critical. David Morata is the president of Morata Wealth Management. Nordic socialism, or at least the myth of such, today is the topic as he kicks off, or we continue here, discussions on socialism. David, welcome. Oops, there we go.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, so we need to start out with the definition, always, what is socialism, so people know what it is we're talking about, then we can go from there.
Yes, socialism is usually defined as a political and economic theory of social organization that advocates that the means, distribution, and exchange should be owned and regulated by the community as a whole. So it's almost the exact opposite of economic freedom. Economic freedom is the free market ability of people to produce, trade, and consume goods and services free from such restraint. So you would expect that if you had a spectrum from socialism, it would be zero economic freedom. And if you had economic freedom, it would be 100% economic freedom. And you could almost score every country between zero and 100 on how much economic freedom they have. And socialist countries would score very low, and economically free countries would score, that depended upon the free market, would score very high.
All right. This idolization, I'll call it, of so-called Nordic socialism, and this is something that the left in America points to constantly. Look at these Scandinavian countries. They're socialist, and look at how well they're doing and how wonderful the quality of life is there. How did this all get started, and was there some grain of truth to the origins?
Yeah, well, so people confuse a large welfare state with socialism, and the two are very different. You can have a large welfare state and still be almost all free market economics and have a lot of economic freedom. Welfare state is just a small component, if you will, of economic freedom, and a welfare state by itself may simply be you can only buy this from the government. We have a social welfare state in the state of Virginia, you know, simply because you only have one source to be able to buy liquor, and we all have to buy liquor from this one source. But you still pay the same price, so it's still a little bit of free market economics, but it's not a lot. So anytime you have the means of production and distribution controlled by the state, that's a tiny little bit of socialism. And if you have a large welfare state, you have a lot of that, but you don't have— you don't necessarily cross the line from free market economics. And the way it's come about is socialists would love to point to some socialist country that's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
They're desperate to have some example, because every example of socialism in the world has been a dismal failure. And they keep always saying, well, that's not really socialism the way I mean.
Yes.
I mean the kind of socialism that's the utopia we all want to live in. And so they're looking for some kind of utopia where we all want to live in, where people are happy. And it turns out that the five Nordic countries, Iceland, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, and Norway, actually have a fair amount of happiness and a fairly good standard of living. And so they want to point to that and say, well, see, that's what I mean by socialism. I mean those five Nordic countries. And they don't want to point to all the failures in the world, of which there are dozens of examples of failing socialist countries, all of which you would never want to live in.
Yeah, they are there. And, you know, it's incredible to me that we look at the current example du jour, which is in Venezuela, and we see not only is it a massive failure, but I mean, people are starving, they're eating their pet dogs, they can't get a shower. And yet you have people who say, well, that's just not what we're talking about. But inevitably, that's where things head under such a system.
And Venezuela would score very, very low on economic freedom and very, very high on the socialist scale. It's definitely tilted toward socialism heavily. But nobody wants to point to that specifically because it's failed so miserably.
You know, you mentioned this mantra that we hear a lot, David, about, well, that's not what I mean. That's not what I mean. I had a guy in here, a local socialist, several years ago, and we were talking about this. And his entire thing was, well, they just didn't do it right. And so we're going to do it here. But I started talking to him, and we were talking about Barracks Road. And he said, well, I want that to be employee-owned. And I said, well, what happens if the employers don't go along? And ultimately, he had to admit to me, we're just going to take it. We're going to take it from them.
Yeah. And last month, you and I talked about how socialism, the only way to implement socialism is by means of which most socialists wouldn't agree. And that is the use of absolute force in order to inflict that. It's why some of the worst always rise to the top of government, because if you're trying to implement something that you think is so wonderful that everyone will love it, anyone who doesn't go along with you has to be completely forced, overridden, jailed, sent to re-education camps. Because what do you do with dissent in a system that does not allow any dissent, because everything has to be in common?
Well, this is what's happening here in Charlottesville right now. We've got just a little over a minute left, but you know, very recently, a private individual purchased a rental property here and decided he wasn't going to renew the leases of the tenants because he wanted to do some work on the building and bring it upscale a little bit. And all of a sudden, these violent Marxists come out and marching at the street, going to his place of business, screaming out his name, calling him out individually, and telling him that he needs to, one, donate this to a nonprofit, or he needs to renovate but keep the rents the same. And this is just the beginning. That sort of thing being tolerated and even lauded is very dangerous, because where does that lead?
Yeah, and you have to remember that that the use of violence is not the best outcome for socialists. The threat of violence and the threat of intimidation is much better, because you don't want it to actually get to violence. And a bully doesn't have to beat you up to steal your lunch money. You give them your lunch money because you don't want to be beaten up.
Right.
And so that kind of intimidation is where all socialism ends. We've been talking about the scale between economic freedom and socialism, and it would be nice if there was an objective way of measuring that. And it turns out there is. The Index of Economic Freedom has been running now for over 20 years, and it does rank every single country from economic freedom, a score of 100, all the way down to no economic freedom, a score of 0. And it turns out on that scale, the United States ranks at 76.8 on that objective score. And on that objective score, everything in the 70s is considered mostly free, and the United States is mostly free. It turns out all 5 Nordic countries also score in the 70s, some above and some below the United States, showing that the Nordic countries are filled with economic freedom, and they're not socialist countries at all.
Yeah, this is remarkable to me. Your research was really eye-opening. And so when we come back on the other side, we're going to look at some of the indicators of economic freedom with David Morata, 977-1070. We're also open if there's any anomalies at the polls. You need to get the word to us, robs@wina.com, or just give us a call, 977-1070. More open phones at the top of the next hour. Stay with The Shilling Show. We'll be back in a moment. It's our Election Day special, and I did get some emails I'm going to address in the next hour regarding particularly the office of sheriff in Albemarle County. 977-1070 is the phone number. David Morata is our guest. He's online at moradaonmoney.com. Today we're talking about Nordic socialism and the Scandinavian countries, and we have come to the conclusion in looking at the Economic Freedom Index that these countries are pretty much alongside the United States of America, which, you know, when you look at the United States of America, we seem to be slipping. And is that the trend, David? Are we going down in economic freedom by and large?
We are. It turns out the United States, up until about 2010, used to be in the free category, the very top category, where there's still a handful of countries left there, maybe 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And the United States slipped out of the free category into the mostly free category in 2010. Whole bunch of different reasons for that, everything from the bailouts to cash for clunkers to, you know, just a whole bunch of different policies that had less economic freedom. It turns out the Index for Economic Freedom has 12 different scores, and there are 5 different Nordic countries. So that provides 60 data points that you can compare against the United States. And I thought it'd be interesting just to do the scoring of the 60 different scores. And what I found was the Nordic countries won 29-25 with 6 ties. So it's very, very close, but there are some areas in which the Nordic countries are more free than the United States, and there's more categories where the Nordic countries win than there are where the United States wins. Socialists only want to point to the few where the United States wins economic freedom and say we should emulate the Nordic countries on those few where they're not as free as we are. When in fact, I would love to point to all the areas where the Nordic countries beat us in economic freedom and say, if the Nordic, you know, if the Nordic countries are the model, let's move to that, because that would be more free in the United States. And those who lean libertarian would love those changes.
Let's go. This one was astounding to me because one of the bedrock foundational principles of the United States of America is property rights. And I was really astounded at the research here.
Yeah, the United States' score in property rights was 79.3. Turns out, meanwhile, Iceland, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, and Norway all score in the mid to upper 80s. And the reason for that is that property rights in the United States are guaranteed, but protection's very uneven. Mm-hmm. You've had a lot of civil forfeitures by law enforcement, mm-hmm. and you've had a lot of expansion of occupational licensing requirements that have encroached upon property rights. Really, I love the nonprofit, the Institute for Justice. I think they do some incredible
yes.
work. And if you go to the Institute for Justice, you can see all of their lawsuits trying to fight for property rights and occupational rights and things like that. If Nordic countries are the model, then liberals in the U.S. should be advocates for strengthening property rights because they have much stronger property rights than we do.
Yeah, this is really, really disturbing to hear that report, particularly on property rights. But I think it goes back to what I was talking about earlier before the break and these people calling for essentially the government overthrow of individuals in their ability to manage their own properties, or collectivism in property ownership. Let's go to the next one, which is government integrity. What does that mean and where are we falling short?
Yeah, so corruption erodes economic freedom because it introduces insecurity and coercion in economic relations. Knowing that government is going to be objective and it's going to treat everyone fairly and it's going to have transparency and it's not going to be used arbitrarily is a very important component of economic freedom. And it turns out that the United States has an incredible mistrust of government. And it's warranted. If you look at the, mm-hmm. you know, the 2008 financial crisis was caused by government, and yet they blamed it on the financial markets. There was no public accounting for where the bailout money was given. Government programs continually favor programs that support their own power and reelection, you know, including cash for clunkers and the GM bailout and the Affordable Care Act. You know, the TSA engages in nothing but security theater, and the government habitually lies about everything from NSA surveillance to the efficacy of regulations. Mm-hmm. The corruption perception index in the United States, which is one of the objective measures that's used in the economic freedom, is incredibly low. So, you know, meanwhile, places like Finland actually ranked as the third least corrupt government, you know, on the planet. And in Sweden, corruption rates are low specifically because government doesn't have that much power.
Wonderful.
So if government doesn't have power, then you can't sway that power around in various ways. So if the United States wanted to be more like Sweden, we would deregulate and we'd show budgetary restraint. We wouldn't just go on wild spending sprees to favor, you know, whatever it is that we wanted to favor. So it's kind of amazing to me to look at that. You know, if we wanted to be more like Nordic countries, we would just have you know, our liberals would be budget hawks because that's what they are in the Nordic companies, Nordic countries. Thank you.
Let's go on to the judiciary and judicial effectiveness.
Yeah, and this one was kind of a tie, 3-2 in favor of the Nordic countries. Mm-hmm. If Nordic countries are the model, we should be wary of excessive government power and overreach. Those are the Nordic countries that scored better than us. They're just more careful about that. If Nordic countries were the model, we would have surpluses because 3 out of the 5 Nordic countries are running surpluses and have much lower budget deficits.
I saw that. That was remarkable. Why is it? What is it that they're not spending money on?
So it turns out that if you take Sweden, for example, Sweden was one of the poorest countries in 1870. And in the next 100 years, it went from one of the poorest countries to, I think, the fourth largest or the fourth most prosperous country on the planet. So you reach 1970 and Sweden has become very, very even in terms of its incomes. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a lot of income. And it's done all this by free markets. Then in 1970, it started to do a lot of welfare state programs. Mm-hmm. And it really ran into trouble very quickly. And very quickly, it backpedaled on a number of the different things it had put in place. And one of the things that it backpedaled on is it started to have a very, very flat taxation. So you think about Nordic countries and you think, well, they have this incredibly high taxation, and that's what makes them socialist.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. They have a very flat and regressive tax, meaning we're going to give you health care, sure, but you're going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter how poor you are, you're going to pay for it. So everyone's paying more equally. Well, if everyone's paying for it, then you don't run a deficit. In the United States, they want to give these great bonus giveaway programs, and then they want to means test it and only give it to the poor. And as a result, one, they're not collecting enough revenue to actually pay for it,
mm-hmm.
because they keep heaping it more and more on the most productive people in America. And it's studies have shown that a more progressive tax structure leads actually to less income equality and less bonus equality than a more flat tax does. Because it so heavily punishes production that it ruins production in that country.
This is so critical, what you just said, because it is exactly the opposite of what we hear the progressives saying here in this country is, hey, we're going to solve the problem by taxing the hell out of the people who are successful. And that way we'll just, you know, we'll squash them down and I guess make everybody poor. It's not true.
Yeah. And we're coming up on the next one, which is tax burden.
Mm-hmm.
The top interest rate, the top taxation rate in the United States, the top personal income tax rate, is hit at $500,000. So mm-hmm. we are progressive and progressive and progressive and progressive. And the more money you make, the more we're going to tax it all the way up to $500,000. In Nordic countries, the top taxation rate is reached on average at $90,000.
Wow.
So you make over $90,000, you're in the top tax bracket. So
mm-hmm.
it's got a very, very flat and non-progressive tax for income tax. And then for all the other taxes they have, like a value-added tax, those are actually regressive taxes because poor people spend a greater part of their income than rich people do. And then, therefore, if you're being taxed at a value-added tax, you actually get a greater percentage of your income taxed with a value-added tax. So those are regressive. So when you think about it, if you wanted to emulate Nordic countries,
mm-hmm.
One, you would stop means testing government benefits, and then you would actually advocate for a flatter tax or even a regressive tax where everyone pays equally for the shared benefits they receive.
Let's quickly go to the break. I want to continue and get through as much of this as we can. David Morata is our guest. 977-1070 is the phone number. Schilling Show back in a moment. The Schilling Show into our final segment of the hour. David Morata is our guest. 977-1070. Nordic socialism, myths and legends. Does it even really exist, or are we actually less free than those countries in many ways? And I think the answer, as we're talking about today in 20 pages of research that David has done, is yes. And that's disturbing, but very interesting. All right, I want to go quickly, as we're talking on taxation, then want to move on, which is corporate taxation, because, again, people might think, well, they must tax the heck out of corporations there.
Yeah, fascinating. The corporate tax rate of the Nordic countries, you know, has been, like, Iceland has a 20% corporate flat tax. Denmark is 23.5, Sweden's 22, Finland's 20, Norway's 23.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before President Trump's Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the top corporate tax rate in the United States was 38.9%, the highest corporate tax rates among all the OECD nations. So if the corporate countries are the model, then liberals in the United States should applaud Donald Trump for his changes to the tax code that cut corporate tax rates. So, you know, so this is the kind of strangeness, you know, when you hear Bernie Sanders, and Bernie Sanders is saying, you know, we should be more like the Nordic mm-hmm. countries. I say, amen, mm-hmm. Bernie, but do you know what you're talking about? You don't know what you're talking about. And when Bernie said that, Sweden and Denmark and Finland, their leaders all said, we are not socialist, Bernie. They all got mad
at him.
They were
emphatic, weren't
they? Yeah, they all got mad at him and said, don't point to us as socialists. We have some of the most robust free market economies in the world.
Well, here everyone's embracing the term. It's so interesting that in that place they would look at that the way we used to look at it just a few years ago, which was like, don't label me like that. And here we're saying, hey, I'm the guy running for city council. I'm a democratic socialist.
Right. And I cannot imagine why young people today are enamored by the term socialism other than they have been indoctrinated by their school systems and their professors. That socialism is a great ideal that we should all be striving toward. Socialism is not that great ideal. And part of the radio show today is just to point out that thriving countries like the Nordic countries would be insulted if you called them. They are insulted when you call them socialist, because they are actually in many ways have a greater economic freedom than we do here in the United States.
Let's go to fiscal health and then business freedom, because those are both important.
Yeah. So in terms of fiscal health, you know, we are running on average about a 4.1% budget deficit. But if you look at the Nordic countries, Iceland's running a 4.5% surplus. Denmark is running a 0.7% deficit. Sweden is a 0.9% surplus. Finland is a 2% deficit. But Norway is a 4.9% surplus. So three out of the five Nordic countries are paying off their debt and running a surplus. Only two of them are running slight deficits, none as bad as the United States. And then if you look at public debt as a percentage of GDP, the United States is at 107.8% deficit as compared to our GDP. And our GDP is huge. So that's actually
that's a
lot of money. And then you look at them, Iceland's 40.9, Denmark is 36.4, Sweden's 40.9, Finland is 61.4, and Norway is 36.7. So they're all, you know, less than half of ours in terms of their deficit.
Are we talking about the deficit or the actual national debt?
That is public debt. The national is the national debt that they're doing.
Okay, and what are those national debts? Do we have some sense of what they are number wise? I'm just curious, because what are we at, 21 trillion, 22 trillion,
something like that? Since the Nordic countries are smaller with smaller economies, they're actually much smaller in terms of their debt. So if Nordic countries are the model, the United States should seek to lower deficit spending, run a budget surplus, and reduce our national debt.
That sounds good to me.
That's what we should do, right? And it's amazing to me if liberals are the ones who want a more a Nordic model to be followed in the United States. Why aren't liberals the one calling for all that? You know, I think Republicans even have given up on these kinds of ideas to some extent. It's like, well, you know, we can't seem to change it, and so we're just going to give up on it. You know, where are the budget hawks that we used to have in both parties that would be very careful about that? They used to be in the Democrat Party among Blue Dog Democrats, and they used to be in the Republican Party among physical conservatives. And now, I don't know, maybe they've all moved to the Nordic countries.
There are very few. Rand Paul, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. We have just a couple minutes left, and I do want to get to some of the others. Let's talk about monetary freedom.
Let's do business freedom, because I want to make sure I want to make sure we get to the idea that regulatory issues are done very differently in the Nordic countries. So in the Nordic countries, regulations are written in a very, very general way, and they're principles. They're not rules based, and because of that, they're a much lower burden on the businesses and people living in the country. In the United States, we write them in a very specific way. We specify the technologies that you have to use. We specify the long lists of things you need to do. And as a result, it's very, very onerous on businesses to try to comply with regulations. Regulations in the United States are probably hurting our economy worse than anything else. And one of the things that you have to say in Trump's favor is he's actually reduced a lot of those onerous regulations. It's hard because you're fighting the deep state of the regulatory agencies themselves, to which Congress has delegated the power to write all these rules, and they go hog wild writing very specific rules. So if we wanted to be more like the Nordic countries, we'd eliminate most of our regulations along with the regulatory agencies that craft, manage, and enforce them. We would just really cut those back.
In our remaining couple minutes, highlights other things that you want to make sure we get to.
Sure. Well, the most interesting thing that I found was just the general sweep of freedoms that are in the Nordic countries. I found that absolutely amazing. And I also found it interesting that the Nordic countries are often held up as being having much more egalitarian and equal incomes. They do have egalitarian incomes. But what's interesting about that is they had egalitarian incomes before they had a welfare state. And their taxes do not redistribute wealth. And it's not their taxation system that somehow redistributes wealth to make them equal. They had them equal before they ever started because of free market economics, and also because they have a homogeneous population. And this was probably one of the most interesting things. If we wanted to have more equal wages in the United States, we would simply kick out all of the immigrants who are pulling down our averages. Now, I know that's not the right thing to do, and it sounds horrible, and it is horrible, but we have to accept the fact that when we accept immigrants into the United States, they come in with less skills and they come in with less health outcomes. And the reason why we have higher infant mortality is mostly among the immigrant population. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we have a greater wage disparity is mostly because we have an immigrant population. And if we want to have that, which I think we do, we just need to accept the fact that we're going to have more unequal outcomes. A Scandinavian economist once said to Milton Friedman, "In Scandinavia, we have no poverty." And Milton Friedman replied, "That's interesting because in America, among Scandinavians, we have no poverty either." Meaning, if you're going to have a homogeneous population, you're going to have that. Now, what's interesting is with a lot of immigration in Sweden, they have begun to experience the problems of immigration. And their problems of immigration now are much harder because they don't know what to do with it. They don't have any systems in place to know how to handle it. But it's an increase in everything from crime to income disparity to a number of other different factors. And you know, even to the point at which, you know, you see headlines, you know, so long welfare state, because they don't know what to do with it because their welfare state isn't apt to handle that very well.
David, I hope with all of this work and research that you've done, there will be a book forthcoming from all this, because people need to know this. Are you working on anything like that?
You know, our conversations on socialism might make it into a book one day, but we will definitely put all of this information on a blog post for people to be able to read all of it.
Yes, it's so important. Just terrific. Thank you for all this extra preparation that you did for today's conversation, because it was really brilliant. I appreciate it, David.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right. And he's online at MuradaOnMoney.com. We're going to head into news and weather updates here.